Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and before we kick off the show, I want to tell you about our incredible sponsors. Today on the show, I'm so excited to have founder and CEO of Code2Inspire, Farashta Farou. Farashta, you want to say hi?
Hi, Saran. Thank you very much for having me in your podcast, and hi to your listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. I read a blog post about you. I can't remember where it was on, but I remember reading a blog post and thinking, man, I would love to have her on the show. And so I followed you on Twitter, and then you followed me back, and then you DM'd me, and I said, yes, I didn't even have to ask. She reached out to me. This is so awesome. So I'm really excited to share your story with so many people. I think it'll be very inspiring. So thanks so much for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm also excited to share this story and make more awareness about what we're doing.
Yep. So you are the founder and CEO of Code2Inspire, which is a program to educate and train women in Afghanistan, specifically to give them tech skills. And you have a very, very interesting background yourself. You were an Afghan refugee in Iran, and then you got your computer science degree in Germany, I believe, and now you're based in New York City. So we have lots of stuff to talk about, but let's start by having you tell us a little bit more about Code2Inspire.
Sure. Yeah. So, thank you very much for covering the background. So based on my background, born as an Afghan refugee in Iran, after the Taliban regime collapsed in Afghanistan in 2002, my family and I, we moved to Afghanistan. And in Afghanistan, I was able to get my bachelor degree in computer science. Then I went to Germany and I got my master's in computer science. I went back to Afghanistan and I taught as a computer science professor for almost 3 years in computer science faculty. And meanwhile, as a student and then as a teacher, I was involved in different social activities, especially for women in technology. And I came to United States. The reason that I came was that I co-founded a non-for-profit called Women's Annex Foundation, renamed to Digital Citizen Fund, which we opened 13 computer labs for 13 high schools in Afghanistan.
Oh, wow.
And last January, I founded Code2Inspire, which we opened the first coding school for girls in Afghanistan in November 2015. The reason that I really wanted to establish something like Code2Inspire is that as a woman who has experience being a student in tech and a teacher in tech, we face a lot of challenges and barriers, especially if you're living in a country like Afghanistan. There are a lot of different factors which makes it very difficult for women to access education, and definitely technology is a more specific aspect to that. So with Code2Inspire, we opened the first coding school, which we are teaching the girls from high school to computer science background, computer coding and programming.
So you talked about how there are different factors that just makes it hard to be an Afghanistan woman who wants to be educated and get technical skills. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those factors are?
Sure. So thinking about Afghanistan as still a developing country, which passed a couple of decades of war and people were really get behind accessing infrastructure, and especially for women, there were a lot of violences and preventing them from education. There's still a lot of challenges for women even accessing primary education. One factor can be safety and security. So imagine if you are a female student and you are graduating from computer science faculty and you want to find a job related to what you studied before. So if you find a job opportunity outside of your hometown, majority of the families won't let their daughter to travel by herself unless you have a male companion. And if you want to take the ground to travel, not a lot of family prefer that their daughter do that because it's a lot of risks and there's a lot of the presence of Taliban on the way. And if you want to take the plane, not a lot of family can afford the tickets for the plane because majority of the families in case of financial issues are not very well funded to support extra costs for their family. Also, if you think about cultural aspects, there are a lot of issues as well. For example, in our culture, we don't have the concept of living with other people. Like here, for example, finding roommates and living with other people. So if you want to go and live in other city, unless you have a very trusted family member that you can go and live with, so you can technically go to the other city. So mobility of women, it's a very big issue in Afghanistan.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
And there's also other factors. For example, a lot of families, they prefer that their daughter become a teacher. Why? Because it's a well-respected job in the society. You get paid and you only deal with women. So majority of those students who graduate from computer science, they're going to be a teacher. And unfortunately, most of the time, they're not going to teach what they studied in computer science faculty. So sometimes they maybe teach very basic computer literacy program, or maybe teaching languages like English, mathematics, something which is not really related to what they studied. Also, if you want to think about women be an entrepreneur, so if you want to be an entrepreneur and create your own startup, it also has their own challenges. For example, personally, I had the experience with my friend that when we had our company designing websites and doing IT solutions, when you approach the customers, which are mainly men, and you tell them that we can help you by developing a website or any kind of like needs that you have, but then what happens is that they kind of like look at you and they say, we don't think that women are able to do that. So unfortunately, because of a very strong male dominated culture, they think that like tech and coding and computer science, it's only for men, and the work that women are going to deliver doesn't work, or the website doesn't function. So as a woman entrepreneur, you get less job opportunities and work opportunities. So these were the reasons that really made me to think about establishing Code to Inspire as making a very safe and secure place for the girls, that they come, get educated, they use the internet and facilities for free. And it's an after-school program, so they come after their school. And we teach them certain skills that based on that skills, they can find job opportunities online. So they don't have to be worried about traveling. The only thing they need is a computer and internet connections that they can find a lot of work online, do online, and then get paid online.
So what I find so interesting and inspiring about this is if I had all of these different factors, these barriers, these very complex issues to tackle, I'd be terrified. You know, I'd be really intimidated and I'd just kind of feel very pessimistic about the situation. But you really confronted it head on and you said, okay, well, how do I do this? I'm going to do something about it instead of feeling the weight and kind of succumbing to the burden of these factors. On just an emotional level, how did you manage to look at the situation, look at your own journey as a refugee and then coming back and teaching and all that? How were you able to channel that into optimistic action instead of it just being a terrifying thing that feels hopeless?
Yeah, so the thing that really made me not to be afraid of really raise my voice and do and go after my goals and dreams is that I think the factor that I was born as a refugee in Iran, I definitely remember the time that we had a lot of issues accessing education. So because we were refugees, not a lot of schools accepted refugees, and you should have specific papers and permits to go to schools as a refugee. And I remember that my father was going to a lot of offices to get the right paper for us. So I think owe my parents, and because they really been very supportive of us to get the right education in Iran, even though it was very difficult to access the right education. But I think when I went to Afghanistan and I was a student, I really wanted to always raise my voice and talk about what is not right about some of the cultural issues that the people are believing about women, and they think that, or some people, they look at women as like a second class citizens. And I really try to, by doing social activities and social works, raise more awareness. Although, yes, I faced different kind of like challenges. People were unhappy about your work. They send you not nice emails or some threats, or they just try to put your moral down that you don't continue your work. But actually for me, facing all these challenges really taught me that you can do the best out of the least, and it doesn't matter where you are or who you are. I think the most important thing is that how you can use the available resources, even the least one, to make a good opportunity out of that. So that's why I really try to focus on my goal, and coming here in the United States really helped me to make my network broader and talk to people and raise more awareness. And then this led me to help and create Kotun Inspire, that I can help other girls in Afghanistan.
So when you are designing a program that has to face all these different issues, you talked about safety and culture and mobility and just societal belief, I guess, that women can create powerful products and be useful in that way as well. How did you prioritize solving these different problems? How did you piece them together to create a program that addressed these different issues so that women are able to come and learn and prosper?
Sure. So in a community that there is still a lot of people who are against women's education, empowerment, and when you go and tell them, we are going to teach your daughter how she can access internet and how she can be online and share her story, not a lot of people are going to be happy about that. And still there are a lot of extremists and people that they are going to make difficulties and make issues for you when you're doing that. So we really try to be cautious about our cause, because still it's a very sensitive topic. And that's why when we opened our first coding school in Herat, we picked a very safe and secure space. And it's only for the girls, so the family feel comfortable sending their daughter to this coding school. We don't charge families, so a lot of families who can't afford and pay their daughters to have extra education, they feel comfortable sending their daughter to our coding school because everything is free for them. And also, one important aspect, which I really believe that for countries who have a strong traditional and cultural issues, is that you have to make a very trustworthy relationship with the community. So what we did, we went to the schools, we talked to the students at schools and told them about our goal, what we were doing. And when we opened our coding school, right now we have around 60 female students every day in our coding school coming. And then the families of those girls, they became interested of what we are doing. And we saw that every day the brother or the father or the mother of one of that girls coming and asking us what we are doing and like what's the purpose of this program. And once they saw that their daughter are very enthusiastic about doing this and they're feeling great about coming here, they can be our voice and our goodwill ambassador, and they can talk to other people and raise more awareness. So for us, I think one of the very most important key of success was that we really established a very well trusted relationship with the local community. Once you have the support of the local community, they really help you a lot to reach out your goals. And then in case of mobility, living in the world right now, the only thing you need is a computer and internet connections. So we try to find job for girls so they don't have to be worried. They can work from home or they can work from our coding school. So the family will see that the daughter shouldn't really travel to find a job. They can do a lot of stuff at home or in our coding school and they can get paid. So we really try to consider all the culture aspects and combine it with the technology and make it acceptable as much as we can for the community and families.
Have you found it difficult to convince the girl actually going into the program that this is a good option for her?
So the very first time that we started talking to the students about Code2 Inspire, majority of them, because we have high school students from 8th grade to 12th grade in our coding school, a lot of them, they didn't know about what is computer coding, what is programming, and a lot of them even didn't have a computer at home. So it was kind of like a very new topic for them to understand, but they felt so excited about it. And for the first time, we had 150 applicants from all the girls that they wanted to be in our coding school. But because for the first year, our goal was to have between 50 to 60 female students. So we took exam and we picked the top 50 who had the best score in computer and in English. Actually, we got a lot of good feedbacks from students. I think the only reason if they were hesitated and they didn't know what to do is that it was a very new concept for them. Developing app or making a website, what is coding, programming, which we really try to bring more awareness about this topic within the local community with Code2 Inspire.
Yeah, when we talk about coding bootcamps, I mean, learning to code in general is a very emotional process. It's just hard if it's not something that's familiar to you. It's facing failure on a regular basis, right? Things are always broken until you fix them. And so when I'm thinking about that, just kind of the pains of learning anything new, when I combine that with the social, cultural, safety issues that you talked about, I can imagine that being an even bigger emotional burden than it would if it were, you know, a boot camp in New York City, for example. How has the cultural, societal factors of being an Afghan woman, how has that come into play in their coding journey? And what have you found to be effective in combating that?
So I think the girls really changed a lot from the very first day that they came to our coding school. The one factor that we really try to also consider is that about coding, one aspect is that we really want to be a good coder. So it's more about technical issues and learning and education. But also, I think the most important aspect is also as how you can feel confident and you feel good about the work that you're doing. Unfortunately, as a teacher that I had the experience, I remember that a lot of my female students, when I was teaching, they didn't raise their hands to ask a question because they were hesitating. They were thinking that, oh, maybe the male students, they're going to make fun of my question. Maybe my question look a little bit weird. So they didn't want to risk that. And then after, when the class was finishing, they were coming to me and they asked their questions. And I was really getting upset that why they just didn't ask the question in the class, because if you don't follow the class, you won't learn. So the thing that we really try to focus in Code2 Inspire in our coding school also is that we want to boost the self-esteem of the girls. We want them that they stand in front of the crowd and they talk about their project and they defend about what they've learned so far and they learn about their rights. So certainly still it needs a lot of work, but we saw that a lot of girls are really getting more vocal, more active, and they feel more confident about learning coding, but also boosting their self-esteem. And one example is that right now, a couple of our girls are working on developing a mobile application for a local issue. So we thought that coding can have a social impact as well. So our girls are going and find a scenario and in the community, and they think that we can develop an app for that and solve it. And right now they're working on that. So imagine as a man that you didn't believe on this women's ability, you download that app, which is in the local languages, and you use it. So you can see, wow, the women did that. So you step by step, you understand that it's only the matter of providing the same opportunities and facilities. It doesn't matter if you are a man or a woman.
So when we had Mariana Costa on the show, she's founder of Laboratoria, which is a coding school for women in Peru. She had a very similar mission of providing technical skills and education to low-income women who had a lot of potential, but not necessarily the right opportunity. And one thing that she said that I didn't think about was what happens once they get a job and they get paid. And she talked about how one of the things for her cohort that she had to deal with is when the girls were getting paid and getting jobs, they would just give all that money entirely to their families. And so they'd be kind of left with nothing for themselves. And there was a little bit of training that had to be done with, you know, help your family, you know, that's fine, but make sure to leave a little bit for you as well. And so I'm wondering, have you had any issues like that with your girls where it's, you know, once they become established and get that job, they are trained or they're educated to take care of themselves as well as taking care of their families?
Yes, that's true. I think we faced also a bit of this challenge with my former foundation that I was working. Right now with the Code to Inspire students, we are still on the educational phase, but certainly one of our biggest mission is to find job opportunities for those girls, either as intern or full-time or part-time and working opportunities that they can get paid. There's one aspect is that once the girl is getting paid, yes, certainly the families are getting involved. If you look at the side that there's a family that they won't let their daughter to work and they tell her to be at home or they use violence against her. But at some point when they understand that if that girl get the right education and find a job through that education, not only she can help herself, but also she can help the family, they actually become more supportive of that girl. So it leads to less violence against women and more support from the family. So that's a good point to see that the family will support once they understand by having, like, if their daughter become more educated, they actually can have like a higher salary and can help the family. But that's true. One of our mission is that we really want that the girl become financially independent and they take care of their own finances. So we certainly are thinking about developing a financial literacy curriculum for them, how they can keep track of their finance, either by managing their bank accounts or it's a future plan for us, but we are going to think about how we can think about maybe looking at the cryptocurrency concept like Bitcoin, mm-hmm. That they can get paid so they are in charge of their own account.
So what do you hope to accomplish in the long term, right? Once the people in your program are trained and educated and get jobs, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, where do you see Code to Inspire? Where do you see it going? Where do you want it to be?
Sure. So one of the very most important goal and mission of Code to Inspire is that 100% job opportunity and job employment for all the girls in our coding school. So we really want that each girl from our coding school, when they graduate, they find a job opportunity and they get paid. So they become financially independent. This is really one of our most important goals. We also try to support our students if they want to be an entrepreneur and start their business. So we help them get through all the stages to make their own business. And in case of expansion and teaching more students, definitely for Herat, that right now we have an existing coding school. Each year we want to enroll new 50 female students. So we each year increase the number of our students. But in a larger and broader aspect, we want to open coding schools in other cities of Afghanistan, like Kabul, Mazar-e-Sharif, or any other cities that have the potential of opening our coding school. So with this, we try to connect all these girls together, and we create a very wide network of women in tech that they can support each other. And we can have annual conferences and association of women. So we really try to raise the voice of women in tech.
So I want to get back to your story a little bit about your journey. I feel like you've done so much and been to different places. I'm wondering, how has Afghanistan changed, or at least the technology climate changed in the years that you've been there, left for Germany, came back, now you're in New York City? How have things changed on a technological context in Afghanistan?
Things have changed a lot. So definitely after a couple of decades of war, you can expect that a magic happen and everything goes well and you have like infrastructure and everything. It always, destruction is easy, but construction is difficult. So I remember the day that I was moving from Iran to Afghanistan. So we were driving by car from a city near to Herat. And when I arrived to Herat border, it was just a very empty land with a very dusty wind, and there were very few greens. So that was like the first impression I got from my homeland. And then when we drove back to the city, it was getting dark, and I could barely see lights in the city and the crowded part of the city. And there were old lanterns that they were outside of the shops. And we didn't have healthy water. We have well at home. Not a lot of people had mobile, forget about internet. The computer was something very new for people. So that was the time that I went to Afghanistan with these issues. But after a decade, during the Taliban regime, we only had 900,000 students in schools, which out of that 900,000, 0% were women, and the 0% are women working. Right now, we do have almost 9 million students, which 4.2 million of them are girls going to school.
That's progress.
Yeah, we have three female ministers. 15 to 17% of the parliament seats belong to women. And Afghanistan population is almost 32 million, and almost 85% of people, they access phone directly or through a family member. Internet penetration is 10%. So we did a lot of progress in case of technology and telecommunication for sure. And within this couple of years. And actually, just 2 days ago in my hometown, we opened the first dam in the history of Afghanistan that, due to all these conflicts and war, was always postponing. So 2 days ago, we opened the dam that actually is going to generate a lot of electricity to the city. So we can't ignore all this progress. And certainly it needs more time to really establish a well-connected, like internet and also electricity and the infrastructure.
How have these different technological advancements and, you know, just the progress that's been made over the years, how has that affected the way women are seen culturally, the way their potential is seen in terms of their ability to contribute financially to their families? Have you seen the technological transformations affect the way women are viewed or the issues they deal with?
So I think definitely technology plays a very important role in any society. For example, a lot of young people in Afghanistan, they access phone, either smartphone, and if they have a smartphone, it's certainly connected to internet. So you see a lot of stories that from the corruption or violence against women, like all very serious cases that people are doing, and the story is unheard. By using social media, a lot of people try to raise awareness. If something happens in one part of Afghanistan, and they try to spread this story in social media, especially in Facebook and Twitter. And I saw a lot of cases that they just like went so viral that the government took action against them. Was it about a violence for women? Was it about a corruption? Any kinds of like issues that in past it couldn't be heard, but now because of the technology and social media, people are really trying to make it more clear. So the government should be involved, and I think that's a very good aspect of involving government through social media, and then they can't deny what happened and they have to follow that case.
So I want to talk a little bit about your experience as a professor. I've heard many stories in the US about how women faculty members in general are not treated very well, specifically in computer science, are definitely not treated very well. And I'm curious about your experience teaching computer science in Afghanistan.
Sure. I think because before being a professor, when I was a student, I was also the first female mentor in my faculty. So if I want to say about being a first female mentor, I was teaching Java programming. And I remembered at that time, there were total students of between 250 students that I was going to be their mentor and tutor. I remember the first day that I was giving my mentorship and class, because our lessons was in English and our teachers were coming from Germany. So a lot of students had issues learning the lessons because they didn't know English. And that's how they sign mentors, that they teach them in local languages so they understand the lessons better. The first day that I had my Java programming tutor class, only 10 people showed up, and I think majority of them were girls and maybe just like one or two of them are boys. Hmm. The reason was that they were thinking, oh, why we should go and learn from a girl, from a woman? Like, we are men, we don't want to learn from a woman. So that was a very like a cultural issue. But then because they understand that if they don't come and sit in the class, they're not going to follow up the lectures because all the lectures are English. So after a while, I could see that the number of people and the students were increasing. And then after a couple of months, I had like the full house of all the students coming to my classes. So I think it's just like a very strong cultural issues. And when I was a teacher, because I had that experience, I really wanted to establish a good relationship with the students. Because also the issue, I think, in Afghanistan is that one aspect is you being as a student. The other aspect is that you have a lot of cultural issues in your family, in the city you come from. So there are a lot of different elements that the students make them stressed or anxiety, or they just like can't follow their lessons. So you should understand all these elements which students carry with himself or herself every day. Some came from a very poor family background, some came from one part of Afghanistan, traveling here, living in a dormitory, not in a good situation. So I think the most important factor is that you really should understand your students and try to build a relationship that would be in a respect, but also understand them and just try to help them.
Mm-hmm. How was the atmosphere among the faculty members?
We are in Herat. Actually, we are a very young faculty. We established a couple of years ago. We were actually, me and my colleagues, we were the first registered and official teachers of computer science faculty. And we were a group of young boys and girls, and because we were almost all of us in the same age, so we could understand each other well, and we really support each other. So it was a very good atmosphere of having a support of each other and really try to make something from like take something from the ground and really try to grow it. So it was a very pleasant experience. I mean, certainly there were issues, but we all have been very supportive of each other.
So when we had Juan Buritica on the podcast a few months ago to talk about Colombia and to talk about learning to code there and creating conferences and community, I found it so interesting that he did a lot of that work while being based in New York City, and you're currently based in New York City. So I'm wondering, what has that been like to manage and build and grow a program in Afghanistan while being here?
So yeah, certainly it has a lot of challenges being not in a place physically and be present. I think what makes technology something very amazing and powerful is that you technically don't have to be somewhere physically to make a change. With FNB online, you can make a lot of changes. So I had a lot of good experience and connections with the students in Herat computer science faculty. So all the people who are helping us in Afghanistan in Herat, they're my former students, which they are teaching our students in coding school. So so every week, certainly I do Skype call with them. Every day I have a call with our project manager to get the updates, and we, with our team here, we try to every other week have a call with our students or with our mentors. So we really try to engage and keep them motivated and connected, because also the other aspect is that it's always good to be connected and hear from them what they suggest, what they think, because their feedback is really valuable. And we really try to stay in touch with them. So I think it's a very interesting journey. If you want to do something online, it certainly has a different feeling and aspects rather than to be physically somewhere.
So you've spent many years in the technology field in Afghanistan. You've done a lot for the community and to, especially to help more women become more technically trained and more independent. What has been your proudest moment in all of your efforts?
I think the proudest moment that I really felt proud of what I have achieved so far is that the day we opened the coding school in Herat, and now every day I'm seeing that the girls are tweeting to me and to to people, and they talk about their experiences. They take a screenshot from their code. They did a lot of website designing. So that really makes me feel so happy every day when I see the notifications in my Twitter from all the girls that they talk about what they've learned. So I think it's just amazing to see that every day 50 girls come learn something, and every day they learn something new, and you give them hope, because certainly a lot of them, they are not sure what's going to happen to them in future. And with this, you help them and you give them a direction.
So next, let's do some fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
And instead of finding the answer of a question, change the question. So most of the time when you face a challenge, I face a lot of challenges, and a lot of people around me, they were like, yeah, just forget about it. Maybe rephrase the question, but it's not the way to escape from the question. You should find an answer for that.
Huh, interesting. I like that one. Number two, my first coding project was about?
Tic-tac-toe, that game. That
yeah,
I'm sure
me
a
too.
Lot of people. Yes. So it was my first project that we had to make that game in Java. So it was very exciting, but very difficult for me for that time.
How old were you?
I think I was in 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 19.
Mm-hmm. As part of college?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
That what type of coder I want to be in the future. You always, sometimes you become confused if you want to be a front-end developer, a back-end developer, a mobile app developer. Like I was very confused which area I should pick. And I really wish that I had like good people around me to really help me what area I should pick and what languages really help me to be the best and that aspect.
Oh, that's such a good one. I think that's something that a lot of people currently struggle with in our community. What eventually helped you decide which one you'd be interested in or which one you might want to go into?
Sure. So I think it's also first depends on your like innovativity, creativity, and like desire. For me, I always love design and colors, and that's why I really liked being a front-end developer. But then people who really love like complicated issues and algorithms, certainly being a back-end developer, it's a good option. So I think it's also like depends which area you feel more comfortable and your creativity comes the most. So certainly you feel that and then you pick that.
So did you end up figuring out what your options were from having more senior people guide you, or did you use mostly online sources? How did you get to the point where you even knew what the choices were?
For a lot of questions, I try to use Google and search. So I search a lot and I found out about different kind of developers, and then I found out about the front-end developer and the languages, I really liked it, and I was like, yeah, that's the thing I really want to do.
Next, let's do some shout-outs. You have a couple for us?
Sure. So I think for myself and also the students at Code2 Inspire that we are trying to help them by teaching materials, it's always good to find places that they have very innovative and nice ideas. I think that Udemy.com, that website, it's a good source of for your audience if they want to go and search. They cover a lot of different topics. And certainly if you want to work as a team, which always I think it's very joyful and to have a group of people working together on a project, whatever is that, it can be an app or anything else. There are a lot of different kind of platforms that you can use, and we use Slack that you can have it as an app too. So I think it's the best team communication platform because you can have real-time messaging, archive your information, assign tasks. So I found it very amazing, and our mentors in Afghanistan use that as well. And something not related to technology, I think it's also important that every day when you wake up, you are inspired to what you want to do and you just focus on your mission. And for me, I always try to read inspirational quotes from Rumi. Rumi is a 13th century most influential Islamic scholar and poet. And if you have time, just go and search. He has a lot of wonderful inspirational sayings that every day I pick one and I try to just feel that saying and continue my day.
And how do you spell that? Rumi?
Yes.
Nice. Oh, very. I love inspirational quotes. I know they're generally really cheesy, especially the ones on Twitter, but I still love them anyway. It just gives me so much positivity during the day.
Yes.
So I have a couple personal shout outs. One is actually both from the Codenumby community. One is called Learn Strift Time. So if you don't know what Strift Time is, it is a way of formatting local time based on local settings. So it might be, you know, you being able to say Monday, June 8th, or just, you know, 6/8, and just different formats for dates and times. And the thing about Strift Time is there's so many different things to remember and the symbols aren't very intuitive. And so someone from our community, Hunter Stevens, tweeted out during one of our recent Twitter chats a thing that she made, which is called learnstrifttime.com, and that's learnstrftime.com. And it's a really, really thorough, very, very detailed, lots of really great examples on time patterns, on date patterns, on different combinations, and it's super, super helpful. So definitely take a look if that is something that you're working on. Most of us have to use date time in some web app in some respect. That's definitely a great resource for you to check out. The other one was recommended to me by Katrina Owen, who we've also had on the podcast, founder of Exorcism, absolutely awesome person, and it is called The True Size Of. And this is an app made by James Talmage and Damon Manise. Hopefully I'm saying that right. And the premise behind the app is that a lot of times 2D maps are not great or not accurate representations of what the world actually looks like. And so one of the most popular versions of the 2D map is the Mercator map, which I think we're all pretty familiar with, just the standard flat map. And what that map does is it tends to exaggerate the size of countries near the poles and makes the middle ones seem a little bit smaller than they actually are, which is something I didn't know until I checked out their site. And so what they do, it's really cool. What they do is you can type in a country, you can take that little country graphic, and you can place it on different parts of this map that they have. And it'll tell you what the size of that country looks like based on the Mercator map, based on where you put it. So for example, if you take, so my country, Ethiopia, I did a search for that, took the little graphic, and if I move that towards the poles based on the Mercator map, Ethiopia is huge. And if I put it next to America, it's way bigger than I thought it was because America is closer to the poles than Ethiopia, which is right on the equator. So it's very, very interesting just to see different representations graphically, different representations and how technology can be used to show different things in different situations. So definitely check it out. Pick a country, move it around. It's lots of fun and a huge learning experience too. It's really, really, really cool. If you want to join the conversation, you can join us on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code. Or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. To search for hashtag Code Newbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can learn more about that as well as show notes on this episode at codenewbie.org/podcast. If there's a topic you want to hear about or a guest you want to hear from, send us an email, hello@codenewbie.org. Thank you again, Freshta, so much for joining us. You want to say goodbye?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, and I hope that your audience enjoyed this conversation and I could give them a good story about Afghanistan.
Yeah, definitely. I've learned so much. Oh, one other thing, actually, if we want to support your work or, you know, learn more about what you're doing for Code to Inspire, how do we do that?
Sure. So you can visit our website, codetoinspire.org, and you can check our blog section. We always update the recent news and information. Yeah.
And is there a way to donate to the nonprofit as well?
Sure. We are a 501c3 registered non-for-profit in New York City, and you can go and click the donate tab, and there are different ways of giving us donations.
Awesome. So check it out, support their work, tweet at them, tweet about them, and let's get some more Afghan women coding.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you again so much for joining us. Thanks for listening. See you next week.